Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it's a Friday. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1 in Los Angeles. Joy Taylor's joining me. I thought Skip won that Julian Edelman argument. That was a big last 10 minutes for Skip. Shannon does not agree with me. It's great having everybody in today. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Good morning. Look Happy at Friday.
You look like you should be going to a Keith Urban concert.
Look I look country.
You look hip.
I thought this was very like business-like. Boy, I look like you, a librarian or something.
No librarians at my school look like that.
I guess I could toss some cowboy boots on it, but you're not going to a concert. You're going to like an exclusive.
Oh, stop.
I want the background story on this on Monday because this is we're being fooled here.
Well, let's start the show with the Dallas Cowboys. They're having camp, and Zeke isn't there.
Right.
Okay, so I have kind of a rule in life. I'm just going to – this is kind of behind the curtain. I won't waste too much time on it. What do I buy in life? I buy things that I think are growing in value. I'll buy a home. I'll buy land. I'll buy a stock because I feel over time they're growing in value. I tend to have a theory on life that I lease my fun. I don't buy a boat. I just lease it. I'll go and pay for the day. I lease my golf clubs. I lease my skis, jet skis. I lease my fun because they're declining assets. Once you get a jet ski, an hour later, it's worth less. Once you buy a car, you drive it off the lot, it's worth less. So I tend to buy things that are accelerating in value, and I lease things that are declining over time in value. That's just kind of my theory. I don't think it's revolutionary. I think that's what a lot of people in do with wealth management and with their money, right? I feel the same way about the Dallas Cowboys. Dak, to me, is the land, the stock, the house. He's an accelerating asset. Zeke is a declining, fun asset. I would pay Dak. Dak is a quarterback. Dak rarely gets hit. That's why Dak can always play. Dak is mature. Dak will get more mature. Dak is good. Dak is getting better. In 8 years, Dak may well be twice the quarterback he is today. He is an ascending asset. I would pay Dak. Even if I got to pay a little too much than I want for the house and a little higher price than I want to buy the land for and a little more than I want to pay my quarterback, I think Dak Prescott is an ascending asset. Now, we can argue about the price on the house. We can argue about the price on the quarterback. I wish Dak would take 29, not 32. But don't kid yourself. He is an ascending asset. Zeke is not. Zeke is closer to the car. I'm not saying you don't need transportation, but the minute you get it off the lot, it's worth less. Zeke will never be better than today. Every hit, he's a little less of a running back. And sometimes I have a test in life, say it out loud. Immature running back, demanding money, 2 years out from a contract, at a position that's not trending particularly well. I think it's an easy decision. I got a bunch of people to pay in Dallas. I'm paying the quarterback first. I'm paying the pass rusher second. They've already paid him. I think I'm paying Amari Cooper in 2019, wide receiver third. Then I'm paying Jalen Smith, the linebacker. Great kid. Outstanding position. You need athletic linebackers. Byron Jones. That's how I feel about Zeke. Nick Wright talked about this morning. There's a lot of mouths to feed, and Zeke is not doing his so-called friends any good here cutting in line.
Dak Prescott has made less than $3.5 million in his entire football career. That is less money than Zeke is scheduled to make this season on a contract that he thinks has him underpaid. I do find it interesting what potential locker room politics, even if they're able to keep it quiet, happen if Zeke attempts to cut the line almost, where Amari's got 1 year left, Dak's got 1 year left and has never been paid, Zeke's got 2 years left and was a top five pick.
People tell you who they are. Maya Angelou used to say this. Believe them. Johnny Manziel kept telling you in college, here's what I am. Me guy, immature, not a guy you want to build a franchise around. And Cleveland's like, can't hear you. Patriots took Johnny Manziel off their board. Colts took him off their board. Cleveland's like, we can't hear you. We can't see what you're doing. Zeke's telling you who he is. Immature, me over we. I mean, Dak Prescott's got more leverage right now. He's a quarterback in the quarterback league. He's like, I'm just going to play. We'll get it figured out. I mean, it's become a wide receiver league more than a running back league. Amari Cooper's like, I'll play. Uh-oh, all good. They asked yesterday, they asked Jalen Smith, who, by the way, is an unbelievable linebacker for Dallas, in a game now that you need athletic guys in space. Linebackers matter. You know what Jalen Smith said when they asked him about Zeke's contract? He said, quote, I'm here. People tell you who they are. You got to ask yourself when you're paying people, what's their position? How's the position trending? Are they long-term employees? Do you want them in the building for 5 years? Do they play well with others? Are they we over me? Don't get me wrong. They're pro athletes. I get they want the money. But if you're asking me today, deserving contracts before Zeke, I'm paying Dak first. He's the quarterback. I'm paying DeMarcus Lawrence second. They already got him. I'd pay Amari Cooper because there's clear signs that Amari makes Dak a better player. I think I pay the linebacker, Jalen Smith. I don't have to pay Van Der Esch for 3 years. I'm paying Jalen. And the Cowboys were looking for a corner for about 8 years since Deion Sanders, maybe 12. They finally got one. Pay the damn kid. It's the NFL. You got to have one world-class. Even the Patriots pay Stephon Gilmore. Even the Patriots pay a corner. You've been looking for 15 years for a corner. You got to pay Byron Jones. Great kid, great corner at a position that's increasingly popular. I'll just keep doubling down on this. I think I've doubled down on this 9 times this week. You keep telling me you want Zeke, and it's an easy decision. I think it is easy. I'm paying Dak, DeMarcus, Amari, Jalen, Byron. I'm not paying Zeke. You can get a haul for him. Pay ascending assets, not declining assets. Lease your fun. Dak over Zeke all day. Let's shift to this. You know, it would be nice to come to work every day and have a staff that was supportive and not working against me. And this morning, the staff goes out, oh, look, Baker Mayfield, odds to win the MVP. That's so funny. First of all, it's voted on. So, of course, Baker has a shot because Baker's got a better story. This is what MVPs have become. NBA MVP. It's not about value. It's about stats. It's called the MVP, not the MSP. But Russell Westbrook won it. Derrick Rose won it. Really, Derrick Rose valuable. Has there ever been a minute of his life he was more valuable than LeBron James in a basketball court? The MVP is voted on by writers who like stories and romance over reality. Of course Baker Mayfield's going to get a ton of votes. I would be shocked. As long as Cleveland has a winning record, one game over 500, I will be shocked if Baker doesn't finish top two in the MVP. His story's better. Now, if you're asking me who I think the MVP the last 5 to 10 years in the NFL, there's three players in this league that I think are way more valuable than everybody else. And again, the word is valuable. Andrew Luck is number one. He's gotten teams to the AFC Championship, bad rosters to a conference championship. Number two would be Aaron Rodgers. He's gotten bad defenses to a conference championship. Third is Russell Wilson. He's gotten horrible offensive lines into the playoffs. Those are the most valuable players. Patrick Mahomes is gifted, but he's got Andy Reid, fastest player on the NFL, the best tight end, a very good offensive line. He's great, and don't get me wrong, there's some value there. But Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson are the most valuable players in the NFL. But I'll give you an example of why Baker's going to finish top two in the MVP voting. I'm not saying he's going to win it. It's going to be top two because people vote stories. Here's a great example. Usually, if you have great receivers and you have great backs and you have great tight ends, people would say, well, yeah, of course they're good. I mean, of course. Baker Mayfield has the first or second best young tight end in football, the best wide receiving core, easily the best three backs combined. But he's going to be the rare guy that gets credit for that. Why? Rookie head coach, downtrodden Cleveland, Baker's a short two-time walk-on. It's a great story. Baker's a great story, and MVPs are about stories. I mean, really, you've ever thought Russell Westbrook was more valuable than LeBron James? In where? Outside of one city, where in the NBA? But he was a better story. Kevin Durant left him, triple-double, even though it's not a stat award. Okay. Take Jared Goff. Jared Goff doesn't have a wide receiving core as good right now as Cleveland. Robert Woods is excellent. He's a number two. Cooper Kupp is excellent. He's a number two. Brandon Cooks is excellent. He's a number three. You can't name the Rams tight end. What about Todd Gurley? What about him? Couldn't play at the end of last year. Jared Goff has never once even sniffed MVP talk. Like Baker, he's young. He's 24-7, 60 touchdowns, 19 picks, and a passer rating over 101 and got to the Super Bowl when his best receiver was hurt and his best running back couldn't play. Not a sniff. Why? Because Jared Goff is tall and didn't have to walk on. And the Rams are in big, rich, greedy L.A. And Sean McVay is a genius, although the Super Bowl disproved that. MVPs are about narratives, and sports writers vote on MVPs, so they vote for stories. Jared Goff's numbers are absurd in his first couple of years. His first year in the NFL, it was man overboard. The fact that he didn't crumble is amazing. He's done nothing but win and get to Super Bowls. Nothing. No crickets. Baker's got better tight end. Baker's got better receivers. Baker's got better back. But it's Cleveland. It's Freddie Kitchens. He's a rookie head coach. We don't. Baker will absolutely be top two in the MVP voting as long as Cleveland has a winning record. And I predict them to be 9-7. So I'm not shocked at all. It'd be nice if my staff wasn't trying to get me worked up every day. And I walk in there and I'm like, hey, free coffee and donuts for everybody. Oh, look at here. Look at here. Time to make some changes.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I've been critical of Mike Tomlin through the years, and I've been critical of Pete Carroll through the years because they're the same coach. Big energy, great at a podium, unbelievable vibe, terrific teachers of young football players. Their young players all get better. And they're a little loose for my taste. Teams get a little loose, a little chatty, a little this, a little that. I'm always left feeling like, I left a lot of points on the table. But Mike Tomlin has a new deal. And even though I've been critical of Mike Tomlin, he deserves a new deal. Listen, here's the reality. You can't look at an all-time great and compare people to him. Take Bill Belichick out of the equation. He never existed. The next four or five great veteran coaches in this league are Andy Reid, Sean Payton, Mike Tomlin, Pete Carroll. And for all of them, aren't we all saying the same thing? Shouldn't they have another Super Bowl? Shouldn't they have a Super Bowl? Shouldn't Andy Reid have a... Shouldn't Sean Payton... Shouldn't... Bill Belichick makes Mike Tomlin look bad. That's because Bill Belichick makes virtually everybody look bad. Okay, it's same with Nick Saban in the SEC. There is no other Nick Saban. LSU was winning 10 games a year in bowl games. They had Les Miles. Well, he's not Nick Saban, so they fired him. Now they're not as good a program. You were winning 10 games a year. You just couldn't beat Nick Saban. Who's beating Nick Saban? One guy in the country is beating Nick Saban. Occasionally, Dabo Swinney. That's it. And he doesn't have to play him every year in the same conference. It's the same with Tiger Woods. For 10 years, Goulet, you were with me. For 10 years, I was taking calls, arguing with people. Rory's not the next Tiger. And Justin Rose isn't the next Tiger. And Ricky Fowler's not the next Tiger. And Jordan Spieth's not the next Tiger. There is no next Tiger. What about Brooks Koepka? He's not the next Tiger. Tiger Woods was 11 years old and signed with IMG. He was 15, and we gave a rip about junior tournaments. Brooks Koepka's great at 27 years old. You didn't know who he was until he was 26. I mean, Tiger Woods at 3 years old was on TV doing a golf swing. At 11, signed with an agency, and at 15, captivated Jack Nicklaus. Brooks Koepka's a late bloomer who's kicking butt. He'll never be Tiger. So it's unfair to compare him. Take Tiger out. Brooks Koepka is unbelievable. Compared to Tiger? Everybody to Saban. Everybody to Belichick. Everybody to Tiger. Who's the next LeBron? There isn't one. Just enjoy LeBron. There is. I mean, the only time in my life where there's been the next in the history of sports, Kobe Bryant was not that far off Michael Jordan. He sounded like him. He played like him. I mean, that was the only time in my life you had an all-time great, and a guy came in and you're like, you know, he's about 85% of Michael. I didn't think he was quite as strong as Michael. Didn't quite have the defensive lockdown. Not quite as great as Michael. But Kobe was about as good as – you're about as close as you're going to get. But when you get these iconic figures like Mike Tomlin, you got to get past the, yeah, but I mean, Belichick owns him. Just take Belichick out. You can't get rid of coaches because they can't beat outliers or golfers or college coaches. Nobody's beaten Coach K. Roy Williams beats him occasionally. That's good enough. That's good enough. Don't try to get happier than happy. Mike Tomlin gets you to the playoffs. I just saw this morning. I think my staff gave me this. He's zero losing seasons. Okay. Again, never had a losing season. 8 of the 12 years he's made the playoffs. And he was 9-6-1 last year with drama all over his locker room. And by the way, some of it is his fault, but not all of it. Big Ben has his issues too. It's not all on Mike Tomlin. So again, can we take the outliers out? Stop firing people, because the SEC has gone through 77 coaches since Nick Saban got hired. Really? LSU was winning 11-10 games a year. Les Miles was winning bowl games. He just couldn't beat Saban. Are you better today without Les Miles? I don't think you are. Nothing against Ed Orgeron. I don't think you are.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So Michael Thomas, a very talented young wide receiver, went to Ohio State. His head coach, Urban Meyer, will join us in 10 minutes. Michael Thomas is holding out of camp. We're seeing a lot of these guys hold out of camp more than usual. Saints offered him $19 million. He wants over $20 million. He wants to be the first receiver to get over $20 million per year. I think this is directly attributed to the NBA. I think everybody watched the NBA offseason. Everybody got paid. And NFL guys, especially skill guys, look at that and think, let me get paid. Most NFL guys are failed basketball players. This is fool's gold. There's about 2% of NFL guys I'd pay. About 2%. It's about 50%. Well, about 35 to 40% of NBA guys I would pay. Over a third of the league I would absolutely pay in basketball. Big money. NFL, I'd pay about 2%. So I think a lot of this is fool's gold. Watch New England, once again, not get caught up in this fool's gold. They're not going to pay their running backs. They're not going to pay their wide receivers. So I just want to remind everybody, the teams that spent big money this year, Niners, Lions, Redskins, Jets, Raiders. Now, I do like some of the Niners and the Jets acquisitions, but the Titans spent a bunch of money last year, and it didn't equal a win. The Titans spent a bunch of money last year on running back. And by the way, they won 9-7 2 years ago. Last year, they won 9-7. Didn't mean anything. NFL guys, a lot of these holdouts, they're looking at NBA guys and going, gotta get mine. You are not NBA players. They got 22 starters in the NFL. You got 5 in the NBA. Individually, NBA guys mean a lot more. Now, remember DeAndre Hopkins came out when he was watching the NBA free agency, and he said, remember that tweet, y'all think top NFL guys deserve top NBA player contracts? I do in rare instances. But my rule has always been this. This is my rule for paying people if I was in pro sports, but let's just stick to football. Do your best players, when they are playing their best, translate to wins. So let's look at players who do. Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, when they're playing their best football, Tom Brady, 48 best passer ratings. The Patriots are 48-0. Aaron Rodgers' career, the 23 highest passer ratings, they're 23-0. So when Tom and Aaron are just spinning it, they win every time. That's a combined 71-0. I'm paying Tom and I'm paying Aaron. Now, I know what you're saying. Colin, that is unfair. What about defensive players? All right, let's look at defensive players. When Aaron Donald got a sack last year, the Rams were 10-0. And when Khalil Mack had a day, the Bears were 7-2. Pay the man. Now let's go to wide receivers. Not as convincing. And I'm going to give you great wide receivers. DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham. When they had 100-plus yard days, that's a good day for an NFL receiver. Giants, Beckham was 8-16. Michael Thomas, a game over 500. Same for DeAndre Hopkins. Now, I am not saying quarterbacks are reliant exclusively on receivers, but they are sort of dependent on them. Odell Beckham, that'll probably be 16-8 in 2 years in Cleveland because they'll have a better quarterback with Baker. So what I would say with wide receivers is use your discretion. If you have a difference maker, there is absolute value there. But the two groups that I see that I'm going to pay, quarterbacks and dominating defensive linemen, those are the guys I'm going to give money to. And I also will give money to one cornerback that can basically force you to throw to the other side of the field, which helps marginalize your great offense. Wide receivers, use discretion. Because when the quarterbacks and the defensive linemen have great Sundays, their teams win. With quarterbacks, always. With defensive linemen, almost always. Wide receivers. And the other thing about wide receivers, you have to be careful. Now, this won't happen in New Orleans because Drew Brees is a veteran. But you do get instances when you get a young quarterback with a star receiver and he feels like he has to funnel the offense through him. Dak is better without Dez. Dak now can sprinkle it everywhere. He doesn't feel beholden. He doesn't feel pressure. I got to get Dez involved. Now, I think Drew Brees and Michael Thomas, Drew's going to throw it where Drew wants to throw it. And I think Michael Thomas is one of those guys with an aging quarterback that there's value there. Drew likes him. Drew trusts him. He's a terrific player. Good hands. Gets open. But my theory on all this paying is when your best players have their best games, does it translate into wins? And so quarterback I'll pay the most. I'm going to pay a big dominating Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack second. And receivers, they're going to be in a group of about six positions where I'm going to count pennies here a little bit. I'm going to be tough in negotiations. I'm going to be a little tougher. I don't want to pay Dak 32, but I'm going to have to pay him 30, and it's four more than I want, but I'll swallow that. Same with the pass rusher to Marcus Lawrence. I'll swallow it. Byron Jones corner. I'll swallow it. Zeke, I'm going to count everything. I'm going to count everything.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
My favorite time of the year as we move into August. College football is about ready to start. It starts in late August. NFL camps have opened up. And two stories right now, Ezekiel Elliott, former Ohio State Buckeye holding out. Michael Thomas, Saints holding out. Former Ohio State potentially holding out Zeke. We think he is. We're not sure. We'll know by the end of the day. But Urban Meyer coached both. Ohio State players under Urban generally go to the NFL and star. They remind me a little bit of the Miami Hurricanes. Back in the Miami Hurricanes heyday, they'd be great in college. Sometimes they'd be better pros. That generally is not the way it works, even with Alabama players now. Ohio State guys hit under Urban in the NFL, and Urban is now joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Let's start with the Michael Thomas, Ezekiel Elliott thing. You coached both of them. You know, it's funny about Zeke because even his father admitted, Urban, coming out of college, he said he's a young 18-year-old man. He is young. He can be a little immature sometimes. Now you're stepping up, could pay him over $100 million. Would you worry about that with Ezekiel Elliott, who's outspoken, he's playful, he's fun? Do you think money would change him? Would you worry about giving him the world?
Well, the thing that listening to your early part before I came on here is that when you talk about Mike Thomas and Zeke Elliott, we have a saying at Ohio State was that your best players have to be your hardest workers. And that's what I look at as a coach. You know, when your best players are not your hardest workers, when your best players are screw-offs and they really set a bad example, that's the issue to me. But you're talking about Zeke is legendary, still in Columbus, about we used to call him the best player in America without the ball. He was the best blocker, downfield blocker. I haven't studied him that much for the Cowboys, but I know that's in him. Same with Mike Thomas. Mike Thomas was the hardest working receiver we've ever had, and we've had some great ones there. So that's the biggest thing. When I heard you first talking about without understanding the fiscal responsibilities of each team, I heard you talking about the quarterbacks and the defensive linemen. I can't agree more. However, your best players have to be your best workers or you're going to have a bad team.
Yeah, that's really fascinating to know that when you say that. I remember USC had a kid a couple years ago, Juju Smith-Schuster. I had a scout call me and I said, I've never seen a kid work harder at practice. He had a legendary reputation. So to your point, Tim Duncan had that reputation. Brady's got that reputation. Hard work sends a signal that you got the right guy. You know, it's funny about.
And we've seen teams with the great players that don't work hard, and those are usually worst teams in professional sports, certainly in college.
You know, it is interesting when you look at what's happening to football. Passers are now receivers today. I always felt as a kid growing up, running backs were more valuable than receivers. Your last couple years at Ohio State, and I watched the trend in the NFL, if I told you in your first recruiting class, you can have the best receiver or the best running back in America, who would you take with today's football?
There is no question. Years ago, I would have taken the running back without any hesitation whatsoever. Receivers a lot of times are fill-in guys, but that game's changed. And I remember I had a long talk with Coach Belichick one time. We had some issues on defense and giving up the big play. And he is one of the few coaches that starts from the back end forward. So he's always going to take away your best receiver. And he says a team legitimately can't just run the ball at you consistently and win the game nowadays. You have too good a D lineman. You can scheme up against to stop the run. It's hard to scheme up to stop the pass if the guy's better than your corner.
Yeah.
And so I think the game's changed so much. I think this is a space game. I know it is in college, and I see the trend in professional football too.
You know, it's funny. It used to be the quarterbacks had to be 6'4". And they had to have a rocket arm, but I'm watching Baker Mayfield. I'm watching Kyler Murray. Now, you generally at Ohio State, you had the bigger, kind of prototypical guys. But it is funny to watch what's happening. Should I be concerned? How big is height to you? Because I'm seeing these guys in the NFL now, Coach. Kyler Murray's like 5'9.5". Baker's under 6 feet. How do you look at quarterbacks now going forward?
Well, I stand behind the quarterbacks my entire career, and I am concerned. I know I coached against Baker 2 years in a row. We beat him in Oklahoma, and they beat us in Columbus, and he's one of my favorite players of all time. I know, he planted a flag, I think, in the middle of the horseshoe when they beat us, but he's as competitive. He raises the level of play around them, but there's legitimate issues when your offensive linemen are 6'8". You have these big defensive linemen trying to tear your throat out coming at you, and you can't see. So I think it's a concern, but Russell Wilson's done a great job. Drew Brees has done a great job, and I think Baker Mayfield. I don't know enough about the player, Kyler Murray. I met him at the Heisman this year, and I was a little bit taken aback. He is short, but he's dynamic, and I think that's going to be the coach. To say you're going to run traditional drop-back pass with those players, I don't think he can do it.
Yeah. You know, Pat Fitzgerald, you respect him, Northwestern coach, very smart guy. It's a small private school, and he wins a bunch of games. He came out this week, and he said, you know, kids are on their devices. College football attendance is going down. And I said, well, I think that's part of it, but I also think part of it is there's too many cupcake games on the schedule. You're asking kids to spend a lot of money and people to spend a lot of money in America. They don't want to watch, you know, Alabama take on, you know, Panera Bread or whatever. I don't know, some school I've never heard of. But here's my point, Urban. I don't want to pick on Nick, but here's my point, is that I do think coaches are in a tough spot. You want to get bowl wins. You don't want to lose. But at the end of the day, some of this is consumerism. You can't put a bunch of cupcakes on the schedule. How did you think about it at Ohio State in terms of what's entertaining, what's getting us better, what's easy, what's too easy?
You know, Billy Donovan, when we were in Florida, he was my neighbor. And one time we were sitting there and having dinner, and he said, you know, March Madness is out of control. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, you can't lose a game. Once you get to March Madness, the stress, the pressure, you cannot lose a game. And I looked at him, I said, Billy, what the hell are you talking about? College football coaches at the top 5-6 programs can never, you're 365 March Madness. So when I was the head coach of Florida, head coach of Ohio State, it was all about win every game. And I could care less about the schedule. I never even thought about it. When I saw that we had to go on the road to Oklahoma, to Virginia Tech, or a tough game on the road, or Florida State when we were at University of Florida, and I would look at some of the other teams not playing a schedule like that, yeah, I would always think, you know, why are we doing this? Yet, you don't really think of the fan. However, that's the job as an AD. That's a job of people at the, you know, administrative level that you have to do. You have to worry about that. But here's a concern I have. That's supposed to be one of the top issues to get into the college football playoff, and I'm not sure it is. You know, I am not sure that's the number one. You know, some conferences are playing 9 conference games, some are playing 8, some are playing FCS schools, some are not. There's got to be, you know, I do believe that has to be looked at in a very neutral voice, neutral eyes, and say what's the right thing to do for attendance, but also who's going to get in that playoff.
By the way, we all know Bama, Clemson, Georgia are going to be really good. And I have a feeling Washington's going to be good out west. You know, Notre Dame will be pretty good. I think Ohio State, Michigan. I think Michigan's O-line's pretty good. Ohio State, they're stocked. What I got 2 minutes here. Injuries are a huge part of the NFL. It's a game of attrition. College, you have 85 scholarship guys. Like, when you go into a season, do you look at your schedule and go, okay, here, 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 here? How do you stay focused week to week with 17, 18, 19-year-old kids? Is that hard knowing they think Ohio State kids know they got better talent than 11 games they'll play?
I just actually had a conversation with Coach Day about that and other friends of mine in the profession that, yeah, you have 85 scholarships, but there is a difference between, you know, you'll have, especially, say, the quarterback position. You have to be so cautious. And I've changed over the years. I mean, we used to, you know, inside drill, I'm sure you understood. That's offense, defense line, that's full go, full contact. Hey, you used to have 20, 30 reps of it. Now you have about 6, maybe 8, maybe 10 max because you're so concerned about the time and effort you put into a player. A guy getting hurt. And you do. When you're at a place like Ohio State, you'll look at your schedule. If you're starting off with Oklahoma, they have FAU, and then Ohio State has FAU, then Cincinnati, and they better be careful. You better not look past them. There's times where I have said, okay, we're not going to practice quite as – I didn't tell anybody. That was between me and our strength coach, that I'm going to kind of save it because I'm looking at that as almost a warm-up to the season. However, you get 2 scrimmages usually before you play a big game. If it's a big game, you have to have those 2 scrimmages to be ready to go. If it's not a big game, I would actually use one of those games as kind of a warm-up to continue to get ready and not risk your guys getting hurt.
Yeah. By the way, we've got a minute. I want to ask you about Trevor Lawrence, Clemson. We'll have to be somewhat succinct. Can this kid live up to the hype? Because he's the best college quarterback I've seen since Andrew Luck. Can he live up to it?
Yeah, I watched him this week. I was kind of studying the ACC, and Clemson separated themselves in many areas. And the program that Coach Sweeney's put there, and the fact they've not had coaches leave, that's amazing to me. However, the quarterback's dynamic. He's got a great release. You know, it's a matter of I don't know him. It's a matter of can he handle the hype? Can he handle, you know, what's coming his way? You know, we've had Nick Bosa's, we've had Dwayne Haskins, we've had great ones, and that's legitimate concern. You have to constantly be having conversation. Once again, I don't know Trevor Lawrence. I understand he's a wonderful guy, but that's real. You become big man on campus. You become people talking about insurance policies and all that. That does distract you, but he's the best quarterback in college football.
Yeah, boy, he is. Andrew Luck's the last kid I saw in college and thought he could play as a sophomore in the NFL. Urban Meyer, we got to run. Have fun golfing, Coach, and I'll see you soon.
Good to see you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
People don't get football topic Patriots. People don't get smart people just don't get, like, dumb. Like when Phil Jackson used to coach the Lakers. You know, he was a really smart guy, and then he'd get conveniently dumb. I'm not criticizing officials. I just made a random comment. No, Phil Jackson's too smart to get conveniently naive. The New England Patriots do virtually everything well, except one thing. Man, they are lousy at drafting wide receivers out of college. They're not even mediocre. They stink. Julian Edelman was a rare get, and it took it 5 years to work. And so yesterday a video came out. The Patriots went and drafted a wide receiver in the first round, N'Keal Harry from Arizona State. I watched a ton of him in college. He's a very nice player, hard worker, Juju Smith-Schuster, big, strong, tough, physical player, not a burner, doesn't separate, but good after the ball, works his tail off. Belichick called Herm Edwards, coach at Arizona State, and said, can he fit into our system? And Herm said, yeah, and I think he'll be a nice player. There was some video out yesterday. Everybody's like, oh, my, here we go. Tom's finally got a guy. But it's interesting because I was reading an article. Bucky Brooks wrote an article a couple months back on what the Patriots do What's the secret sauce behind the Patriots? And they listed five things Bucky said as a former player and scout. They focused on each player's best traits. They build a roster that features versatile players. They place greater value on intelligence over athleticism. Toughness matters. It's always about the team. Blah, blah, blah. A lot of football cliches, right? The one thing I'll say about the intelligence is, this is where I think sometimes Brady and Belichick, this is why my theory on why they can't get college receivers right. You've got the smartest coach in NFL history. You've got an older quarterback. This is a complex, daunting, overwhelming system. And the one player that is tied to Tom on that field is the receiver. And you keep drafting these college guys, and after about 2 years, when they can't synthesize perfectly with Tom, it's like, eh, we're out of here. Listen, offensive linemen have their own coach, and running back is just a simpler position to play in terms of see the hole, hit the hole. The defensive player, Patriots draft every position brilliantly. They can't get receiver right. And so I do think when I look at N'Keal Harry, everybody yesterday is like, oh, and I'm like, I'll believe it when I see it. I will believe a rookie receiver can come into New England and be a big playmaker. I haven't seen it in 20 years. They got Edelman right, and it took 5 years. And by the way, he was a college quarterback, so he was probably better at kind of understanding Brady's kind of mind. This offense is tough. On the offensive side, not on the defensive side, on the offensive side, this offense is rough on young players and it's brutal on young wide receivers. And so everybody's getting hyped up in New England. And N'Keal Harry is supposed to be a great kid. I watched him in college. Herm Edwards has told me, wonderful kid. But man, I've seen this offense, Brady Belichick, chew up star college receivers, chew them up. And they just, it's just, man, Reggie Wayne came into this. Remember Reggie Wayne? Reggie Wayne went to New England and said, I don't like it. It's no fun. It's too demanding. This offense, it is just squeezing every bit of that sponge, and I think it's tough on receivers. That's why, by the way, they get Chris Hogan was in the league. Wes Welker was in the league. Randy Moss worked, because Randy Moss is like a savant football knowledge. Randy comes in, and he just instinctively, Randy's one of the greatest players ever, but he's instinctively, it worked immediately. But Ocho didn't work. Reggie Wayne didn't work. A lot of guys, they basically go get NFL guys who have kind of understand the league, veterans, work commit. I'll believe this when I see it. I've just seen them just, I think it's hard. Because you can't tell me they're great at everything and can't get one thing right. There's got to be a reason for it. And I think the reason why receivers, young ones don't work there, it's just too much. And Tom won't throw to anybody he doesn't trust. He doesn't trust a 21-year-old who he's never seen until 2 months ago. I'll believe it when I see it. See, a lot of people are hyping that up. Not the journalist. That right there was Big J journalism. John, take notes on that. A lot of people on the hype train on that. Not Uncle Colin. Nope.